I'm going to start off a little bit different than I have been. We're going to read a story in the Bible first. It says, and it came to pass in Matthew 11, it came to pass when Jesus had made an end of commanding his 12 disciples, he departed thence to teach and to preach in their cities. Now when John had heard in the prison the works of Christ, he sent two of his disciples and said unto him, art thou he that should come, or do we look for another? And Jesus answered and said unto him, go and show John again those things which you do hear and see. The blind receive their sight, and the lame walk, and the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, and the dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. And blessed is he whosoever shall not be offended in me. And as they departed, Jesus began to say unto the multitudes concerning John, what went ye out into the wilderness to see? A reed shaken with the wind? And what went ye out for to see? A man clothed in soft raiment? Behold, they that wear soft clothing are in the king's houses. But what went ye out for to see? A prophet? Yea, I say unto you, and more than a prophet. For this is he of whom it is written, behold, I send my messenger before thy face, which shall prepare thy way before thee. Verily I say unto you, among them that are born of women, there hath not risen a greater than John the Baptist. Notwithstanding, he that is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. And I just want to talk a few minutes this morning from confusion to confidence. A little bit about John the Baptist. Most of you know that I recently started driving a bus. And it was quite the process to get there. Before you even start the training, they want you to pass some written tests. And so in order to start my training, I needed to pass 4 written tests. The professional driver's test, the science test that we should all know if you drive. There's a class 2B, which is the license for a bus test. And there was an air brake test. And they gave me some books to read. And to be honest, it was a bit overwhelming. I'm not a mechanical person. The air brake one was especially overwhelming. And the professional driver, the signs are pretty common sense. If you've been driving for any amount of time, you should be able to pass those. The bus test was a bit harder. There were some numbers involved, and those of you that know me know that I forget numbers almost as soon as they come into my head. And so it's like, you need to stop this far away, or put your lights on this far away, and as far as I'm concerned, if they're on, what's the difference? If I put them on at 200 meters or 150, people aren't counting. Anyways, it's supposed to be 150, but I said 2 and I got it wrong. And then I didn't know how long you were allowed to drink alcohol before you could drive. So I still forget it, because that doesn't apply to me. There's so many hours before you're allowed to drive again, and I was like, I don't know what, I just guessed the highest number, but I wasn't right. But anyways, I got some of those wrong, but the air brake one, it stressed me out the most, and they gave you a book, and I read the book a few times. I had no idea what any of it meant. And I was like frustrated, and I'm telling my wife, like, I don't know what any of this stuff means. I know what all these words mean, but when you put them together like this, none of it makes any sense. You know, there was no words that I had never heard before, but they had different meanings. Like, I don't know if you know anything about air brakes, but there's a thing called a governor. I know what a governor is, but it has nothing to do with brakes. And like, it was all these words that you know what they mean, but they don't mean what they mean. And it was very confusing to me, especially, you know, I had never really seen how they worked. I had no idea. I never looked under a hood of something with air brakes. I had no idea what any of these things were. They're just pictures and words that didn't mean what they mean, what they should have meant. And it was a whole, like, if you just give me a new word, I would know, okay, that word. But it was confusing in my head. And I'm sorry, I'm not as smart as some other folks. But it was a whole new world. And you can only write these tests in Kentville. Of course, our branch here doesn't have them. And so one evening, I was just, you know, I can't take it anymore. I knew I wasn't going to be able to sleep all night unless I got these tests over with. And so I just drove up, and they were closed like half an hour after I got there or whatever. But I was like, I'm going to write these tests and get them over with. because I'm not going to sleep tonight because it's stressing me out. And so I drove up, and somehow I passed all four of them, barely some of them, but I passed. The air brake one, I was like, I'll be honest, I guess some of it. The lady behind the counter was, she said she was shocked because the look on my face apparently was that I had no idea what I was doing and I was going to fail. And so she was quite surprised that I passed them all. And anyways, then it was time to learn. I know what it all is now, but anyways, it was time to learn. And I spent weeks learning how a bus works, and you got to go through these pre-trip inspections, and you got to inspect the air brakes. You got to look under the hood. You got to look under the bus. You got to make sure everything works, all the lights, all the signals, all the alarms, and all these things. And if you've ever been in front of a bus, there's all kinds of switches. You got to know what all these things do and make sure they all work. And it was a whole, as a songwriter says, a whole new world. And the first time I got in the driver's seat, that was something else. I was slightly confused. You know, all these things, switches on the side, there's nobody sitting beside you. And there's no door on this side. And I don't, you know, it was just, everything's different. Buses, you know, they are longer than I remembered. You know, you get on a bus as a kid, you're like, yeah, whatever, it's a big thing. But then you're driving, you're like, this is still going. And you're looking in your mirrors, and you're like, I'm still not clear of the curb. And I'm out in the other lane, and it's a completely different thing. And I didn't know a lot of things, but as I began to do it more and more and study and learn, it became easier and easier. And now sometimes, to be honest, I forget I'm driving a bus. And I'm thinking I'm going, you know, I park at the church during the day, and a couple times I've driven by, and I'm just going to turn into our street to go to our house. And then if I get in there, I'm never getting out. So I always remember the last second, but so it just becomes second nature, and it's just driving another thing, just like, you know, I've been driving a vehicle for 20 years or more. You know, but at the first time that we, you know, I did it, it was, you know, I wasn't comfortable, I didn't know, and I had no confidence in what I was doing. Before you start studying something, generally there's some questions or some confusion. And that's the whole point, I guess, of studying and education, to make things clear. So they can go from a place of confusion and not knowing what an air brake is and not knowing what all these things are, to a place of being able to drive and do it confidently. And that's how education works. You often start from a place of confusion. You think you learn how to read. You don't know what these letters are. You know what the sounds are. You have no idea what it means. But then eventually you go from a place of not understanding to a place of confidence. Once you're done studying or learning about it, there's this confidence you get from it and the knowledge that you now have. And that's how education works, or should work. Near the end of John the Baptist's life, you know, he's related to Jesus. He spent his ministry preparing the people of Israel to receive Jesus and his message. The Bible calls him the forerunner. He finds himself in this place. He's been arrested basically because he hurt the feelings of some powerful people. They didn't like what he said, and John was arrested for his words. And I'll leave that there. But he told them they were living in sin and they didn't like it, and so they threw him in jail. And John, he finds himself in a place of confusion. John the Baptist, as a man, he was a little bit different than the others. He wasn't confused at the end because he didn't know about Jesus, or didn't study, or didn't know the word, or whatever, or know the promises about the Messiah. He was confused because all the things people were saying about Jesus didn't seem to match or add up with what the scriptures had said about him. His education at this point was incomplete, and he needed to move from this place of confusion about what was going on, what he's hearing, how things are looking, to a place of confidence. And confusion isn't always a bad thing. Confusion can be caused by our circumstances, or a lack of understanding, or a lack of information, or it can just be caused by a time of transition, maybe between in truth. Confusion can cause us to look for things or to look for clarity in things. I don't know if you've ever been in a place where you said, this doesn't make sense to me. Let me figure this out. Let me try to figure this out. I told you before about a few years ago, we had to replace a toilet in the house. And for some reason, whenever I try to call plumbers around here, no one wants to answer or come. And so I've learned how to do things on my own. Sometimes Jeff will tell me what to do, or Greg will tell me what to do, but we figured things out on our own. But there was a leak on one of the toilets, and I tried to tighten things up, and I learned that ceramic will crack if you tighten it too much. And so we needed a new toilet. And so we tried to replace it, and I didn't know anything about it. I mean, I know how to use a toilet, but that's about it. I didn't know anything about how they worked. Really, I know a little bit, you know, how to unclog it or whatever, but I didn't know all the ins and outs. And through some trial and error, I went from a place of confusion to knowing quite well how to do it. If any of you need toilets replaced, I can probably help you now. You know, I learned that there's different sizes. The holes they attach to the floor, the bolts, there's different, 10 inches or 12 inches from the wall. Most are 12, but apparently that one was 10. So that was another thing. And there's the flanges and all the plumbing and the wax rings that you need. All these things I learned about that I didn't know existed. And maybe you didn't either. And now you know these words that you maybe heard before and they don't make any sense. And now you're confused. But this is how it works. You're confused and you learn, and then you go to a place of confidence. People have a tendency to think sometimes that we know everything, even if we're wrong. Some people think they know everything, and that's just in general, but it often crosses over into doctrinal things. And in order for us sometimes to leave an error, there needs to be a time of confusion and a time of questioning. I think most of us are here today because at some point in our life we had questions. At some point in our life we were willing to admit that we didn't know everything about God or about salvation or about life. And we found ourselves here. And in this transition sort of way, confusion only lasts for a time. It's not a permanent thing. And so we find, again, John the Baptist in this place of confusion, slightly confused. He's in a bit of a transition, not from error to truth, but from confusion itself to confidence. He knew who the Messiah would be and what he would do, and because he knew the scriptures and prophecies. But due to his circumstances that John finds himself in, he's in prison, his knowledge becomes limited. He's hearing things about Jesus, rumors and stories, and in John's mind, they're not adding up to what he knew. And because he was in prison, he's unable to go and confirm and check some things out. And so John, he's confused so much, and he's shaken a bit, and so he starts to even question his role in this whole thing. He was supposed to be the forerunner for the Messiah. Now, at this moment, he's not even sure if Jesus is the Messiah. So John starts to question some things. In verse 3, he said, he sent his disciples to say, Art thou he that should come, or do we look for another? Even though at the very beginning, John is the one who said, behold about Jesus, behold the Lamb of God which taketh away the sin of the world. And so John knew that Jesus was who he was looking for. But he was hearing some things. He was starting to get confused. And so he sent his disciples to ask, are you really the one? And I think we can all go through times like this where we question things. Maybe things that were solid in the past, but now we're kind of unsure. In the past, you know, we've studied and learned about lament and dealing with this sort of thing. And there are times where we can have questions like, is this real? Am I doing this right? Am I doing the right thing? Am I following the right thing? Is all this real? And John was shaken and his faith was being tested. And this happens in our life. Something, you know, most of us has dealt with at some point, if we're honest. And it's often during times of loss or pain or heartbreak. And so John sends two of his disciples to Jesus to ask him, are you the one or not? And Jesus gives them the evidence that John is looking for. And by the end of this, John's confidence in Jesus as the Messiah is restored. And it's an important thing to note that Jesus, at no point does he condemn John for being confused. He doesn't get mad at him. He understands. And instead, at the end of verse 11, he praises John. He says good things. He says, verily I say unto you, among them that are born of woman, there hath not risen a greater than John the Baptist. Notwithstanding, he that is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. He says, there has not risen someone greater. There is no one greater that's been born, Jesus says, and than John the Baptist. In case these people around are starting to question everything that John did or preached or said. And that lets us know that even the greatest or even the strongest among us, we can deal with times of confusion in our life. And so we're just going to go through this few points. John, he starts off as a man confused. Maybe the main reason for him being confused was that he found himself in jail. John had done nothing wrong. He'd done what he was called to do. He'd done literally what he was born to do. He'd accomplished his mission to let people know about the coming Messiah. John, he went hard and he worked hard at what he was called to do. He was never told to stop, and so he just kept preaching and he just kept doing what he was called to do. And yet he finds himself at this point of his life in prison. And there's nothing like doing nothing wrong and being punished for it. It brings some confusion, right? Now that generally, I thought I was doing the right thing, and here I find myself being punished. Job, he's got a whole book dealing with that, 40-some chapters, wrestling with that very thing. What have I done to deserve this? And there are times when we feel like, you know, why am I being punished? What did I do that was wrong? And that's where John was. He said, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing. Aren't you the Messiah? You know, I was preaching this. I was telling people this. What's going on here? Why am I in this position? And I'd be lying if I said I have never had these sorts of thoughts at some point. You know, am I doing the right thing? Is this where I'm supposed to be? Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? And this is where John finds himself. And prison is a place of trial, literally and metaphorically. No matter how well things are going, it's hard not to question or doubt when you find yourself in prison or in a trial. Prison test what you believe. It's a place of introspection. You are alone with you and your thoughts. And for some of us, that's a scary thought. And to people today, we avoid thinking. We don't want to be alone with our thoughts, so we scroll on our phones all day long. We look at things. We're reading. We're watching. We're listening to something because that's a scary thought. But John didn't have those options, and he finds himself alone just thinking about his life. And prison gives you time to think and to look back or to contemplate, maybe overthink sometimes. I know none of us would do that here. But trials will do that to us as well. That's what happened with Job. Chapter after chapter after chapter, and just wrestling, going through, you know, what have I done? And his friends were no help. And it causes you to think. You're not going anywhere. There's not a lot of things to do. And so here is John sitting in prison, overthinking everything in his life. Everything he'd ever done was intertwined with the ministry of Jesus, preparing the way for him, preaching and pointing people to him. And now he was here. Was he wrong? Was he mistaken? And the enemy has a way of attacking our strongest beliefs and our strongest convictions. And that's why you'll see someone maybe who was certain, super strong in some areas or beliefs, and when they walk away, it seems to be that very thing that they preached against. He will attack your calling. He will attack your identity. Your strongest convictions represent the most vulnerable targets in your life. Someone who is delivered from a certain addiction will do whatever they can to avoid it, but when they fall, it'll often be in that very thing. Our convictions are there to guard us from those vulnerable things in our lives. The enemy knows it's important to you and will attack it. And if he can get you to break on that, he'll get you. And so with John, the doubts started to attack his very calling, his very being, his very purpose. And if you've ever been called, you'll know that there are times that you will question if you have or not. But we were only, again, we were only on AIM for a few months, but there were some times, even in those few months, we're like, why am I here? Why are we here? Like, I don't understand. And I've had those questions many times. It happens. And if he can shake your belief in your calling and who you are in Jesus, then everything else starts to crumbling. So that's where John finds himself. And second, John wondered about Jesus. And being shaken to our very foundation is something that seems to be common in the testing of our faith. There will come a time when we're tested or shaken to the core. If it hasn't happened, it will. And if we can look back on our life, honestly, you'll probably see a time or two when it has happened. And it could be through mental, physical, or spiritual testing. And as difficult as these times are, they are important, they have a purpose, and they, believe it or not, make us stronger. Just like John wondered about Jesus, the enemy will put questions about Jesus in our minds too. Something happens, and then it's all things like, does God even exist? Does he even care? Does he really love me? Why does this, you know, all these things start coming, the things that we didn't think moments ago. And John wanted to believe, and he felt like he did, but he had this nagging question, are you the one? And it'd be nice if we could live in a place without doubt, but we don't. Without doubt, we wouldn't know what faith is. And so John's wondering about these things. He's wondering about Jesus. He's wondering about his purpose. Because if you know the story of John, his whole purpose in life was to be the forerunner of Jesus. The angel said to his father, many of the children of Israel shall he turn to the Lord their God, and he shall go before him in the spirit and power of Elias to turn the hearts of the fathers and the children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. This was said about John before he was even born. This was his whole life, was to prepare people for the Messiah. And yet here he is 30 some years later, now questioning everything he'd ever done. And at some point we'll find ourselves wondering if it's really worth it. What's the use? And purpose is a great motivator when you feel like you're feeling like you're accomplishing what you're meant to do, it's great. And it feels good and it keeps you going. But when you don't, it can be downright depressing. When nothing seems to be happening, it can be a little bit depressing. If the enemy can get you to doubt your calling or your purpose, then he can get you to stop. And John had led many people to Jesus. He pointed Andrew and John, the first two disciples, to Jesus. And then Andrew brought Peter. He'd done a great job. But here he was in prison questioning everything. And it's wild how, you know, important we can feel sometimes when we're doing what we're supposed to do and everything's working out. We can just feel like we're on top of the world. But then it's also wild how doubt and difficulty can just kind of bring that whole thing down and shatter it all if we let it. So John, he was a man that was questioning these things. This is where he is in his confusion. And then John goes from that to a man who is convinced. There's some things that Jesus points out to John's disciples to go tell him. And the first thing is that the blind receive sight. And I'm going to put this passage up here many times, so don't get angry with me. But Jesus answered and said to them, go and show John again those things which you do see and hear. The first thing he says, the blind receive their sight. So the first thing he told them to tell John was the blind receive their sight. John knew that Isaiah had prophesied about this. In Isaiah 35 and 4-5 is to say, and then that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with a recompense. He will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened. And there are many instances in the gospel we find where Jesus heals the blind. There's some stories that are coming to your mind right now, no doubt, Jesus healing the blind. John knew that the healing of the blind wasn't enough to make Jesus the Messiah, but if he wasn't healing the blind, then he couldn't be the Messiah, because that's what the prophecy said he was going to do. And Romans 10 and 17 says, so faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. And so John starts to hear, because he's been in prison. He doesn't know what's going on. He starts to hear, oh, Jesus is healing some blind folks. Jesus is doing this. The word says that he's going to come and he's going to heal the blind. So as he starts to hear about the miracle, something starts happening in John, and he starts, I believe, moving from this place of confusion to confidence. And that's why testimonies are important. That's why the word is important. We don't share, we don't tell it. The faith isn't built. Faith comes by hearing. We need to hear these things. And again, Jesus answered and said to him, go and show these things unto John. What you do see or hear and see, blind receive the sight, the lame walk. The second thing he says, that John's disciples told John that the lame were walking. And when he heard it, he no doubt remembered again this from Isaiah 35. And then shall the lame man leap as a hart or a deer. And another prophecy is fulfilled here. Another thing encouraging John to believe. Another thing that he hears and encourages his faith. He knew that Jesus couldn't be the Messiah without doing these things. So hearing about them reassured him. Each positive report strengthened his confidence. In this one, it says, Jesus answered and said to them, go and show John again these things which you do see and hear. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed. We know that Jesus didn't come with all the credentials that many Jews expected. He didn't come as a national hero to deliver them from Rome. Instead, we find him coming as a healer and a teacher. And the one thing they had to confirm that he was the Messiah was the prophecies. And yet, here he was fulfilling them one by one. And the neat thing about this part is that there is no specific prophecies about the Messiah coming to cleanse lepers. But yet here is Jesus going above and beyond what they expected him to do. Here he is healing lepers, cleansing lepers, things that they didn't think could ever be done. And he's going above and beyond what they expected. The Bible says he's able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we can ask or think. It's like he was saying, I'm doing all the things that you heard I was going to do, but I'm doing some more things. I'm doing some new things that you didn't even know I was going to do. And again, he answered and said unto them, go and show John these things. And the blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear. And again, Isaiah 35 and 5, it says, the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. This is another prophecy that Jesus has fulfilled. In Mark chapter 7, Jesus heals a deaf man. And these testimonies and reports like this, they're confirming to John that Jesus was in fact the one. Oh, we got another one here. It says, the deaf hear and the dead are raised up. And there are three stories of Jesus raising people from the dead. Lazarus, Jairus' daughter, and the widow's son. Although history tells us that at this time of the story, when John is in prison, Lazarus, he comes later. So only two people so far, according to the Gospels, have been raised from the dead. And people are impressed by healings. People are impressed. You know, when back pain is taken away, blind eyes are open, deaf ears are open, diseases, leprosy is healed. But people are impressed by that. There's something about raising someone from the dead that's even more incredible than these other things. You know, we've all been to funerals. We've all lost people. And it would be something if they would just get up, wouldn't it? Like, that would just... Can you imagine? That would freak everyone out. I think we're having a funeral and they just got up. I know I was upset when my father died because no one prayed for it to happen. I remember as a kid, that's the childlike faith that we're supposed to have. But I remember being upset with it, going, why is nobody praying? And then, but anyways, that's where I was. But then, you know, healing is, that's an incredible thing. But someone being raised from the dead, that's just, that's something we all want to see. We, you know, healing's great. I'm thankful for all the healings, but if I go to a funeral and someone's raised from the dead, I am never going to forget that. You know, that's an incredible thing. There's something like raising someone from the dead that kind of kicks it up a notch. I mean, you know, maybe you can reason away some of the other things. You know, pain comes and goes. Maybe it's just gone away for now. Or maybe their body just healed on their own. Or, you know, maybe they were faking it. Maybe it was all in your head. You know, people can try to reason away some of these healings and things, you know. There's lots of stories of people coming to these big name evangelists and pretending that they're sick. You know, throughout history, we've had some of these, you know, fakers. People come and pretend they're healed, you know, and that kind of whatever. People do that sort of thing, but bringing the dead to life, especially in Lazarus' case, which comes later, 4 days later, he's already been buried. Like, this is, you know, these are things that you can't argue with. And it's possible to maybe misinterpret healings, but it's practically impossible to miscalculate someone being dead and being raised from the dead. And all of these miracles, one by one, are confirmed to John the Baptist, or they're confirming to him that Jesus was indeed the one, and they move John closer to a place of confidence and further from this confusion, closer to confidence in who Jesus was and further from the confusion what he was going on in his life. And so one more thing, and Jesus answered and them, go and show John again those things which you do hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. John, you know, he wasn't a rich guy. He didn't have a lot. He lived in the desert off locusts and honey, and there's nobody here that wants to volunteer for that diet. And he wore rough stuff, Jesus said about him, and what we have to see, a man clothed in soft raiment, behold, they that wear soft clothing are in the king's houses. And the fact that, you know, Jesus ministered to the poor instead of kissing up to the rich was an incredible thing. So many people try to impress others who they think can help them climb the ladder or get a little bit further, a little more power, a little more prestige. But instead, Jesus was going and he was ministering to the outcasts, to the poor, to the lepers that you're not even supposed to be around. He was forgiving people that were caught in sin. And he was ministering to the poor and the sick and the diseased. And we could break all these statements down and spend a lot more time talking about them. But and all through all of these testimonies, John's confusion is turning into confidence in who Jesus is. And then Jesus commends John. After John's disciples leave, Jesus starts talking to the crowds around him about John. And he says, the departed, Jesus began to say unto the multitudes concerning John, what were you out in the wilderness to see? A reed shaken with the wind? Well, when he out for to see a man clothed in soft raiment, behold, they that wear soft clothing are in the king's houses. But what went ye out for to see? A prophet? Yea, I say unto you, and more than a prophet. For this is he of whom it is written, behold, I send my messenger before thy face, which shall prepare thy way before thee. And then he said, verily I say unto you, among them that are born of women, there hath not risen a greater than John the Baptist. Notwithstanding, he that is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he is. So one of the best feelings, I think, is to have someone say something nice about us. Right? Especially when we're feeling down and out, which John was. You know, when we're struggling with confusion and doubt. Billy Cole, the great evangelist, said, for everyone who got puffed up because people bragged on them, there's 100 others who died from lack of encouragement. You know, it's an important thing. You know, to say good things about each other. And as nice as it is, you know, how much nicer is it to have something said, good said about you by God? It's nice if you guys say something good about me, but when Jesus is saying this about John, you know, well done, good and faithful servant. That's what we all want to hear. You know, he said about David, he's a man after my own heart. And he said, there's none like him in all the earth. He said, there's no greater than John the Baptist. It's It's also nice to have someone say something to your face. But when you say something nice about someone behind their back, that means a lot too. John, Jesus waited until his disciples left, and then he starts, in case the crowd had any ideas that there's something wrong with John, because he's a little confused right now. Jesus backs him up and he says good things about it. And that's, that could be a whole other thing right there if you want to preach that. But he supports him behind his back. And a lot of times we'll do the opposite. But Jesus says he's more than a reed shaken in the wind. John wasn't someone who was easily swayed. John's the one that did the swaying. John's the one that ruffled up the feathers. John, that's why he was where he was. And John wasn't easily swayed or shaken by anything. He said he didn't have soft clothing. John didn't care what he looked like. He was more concerned about doing the will of God. He said John was a man who delivered his message. He didn't back down for anyone. That's why he was in jail. He told the king that you're living in sin. You gotta straighten some things out. And that's what Yeah. And he says he was the greatest and the least. He was the greatest man ever born, according to Jesus. But Jesus knows that he's not going to make it to Calvary. He's not going to make it to the upper room. And those of us who can experience that, we're better off, because we can experience that salvation. So in conclusion, I don't know. John, he'd done some great things for God. He paved the way for Jesus, but yet he finds himself in a dark place, in a prison, literally. He finds himself questioning everything and being confused about Jesus, about his calling, about his life, because this is all John had done. He'd given everything to this ministry, and now he was wondering if this was all in vain. If he'd completely blown it or if he'd completed his mission. Because it didn't look good for John. We know John never gets out of this prison. He'd given everything to us, and he's at the end, kind of, and he's wondering, did I waste this? Have I done the right thing? And back to lament, we've talked about it a few times in the past, but if we learned anything from talking about lament, is that we know that this sometimes happens. There are many songs, there's books in the Bible written for people that are kind of experiencing times of doubt and questions. I think most of us, we've been there at some point in our life. But what John does is what we need to do. He does the right thing. He finds himself questioning, he finds himself wondering, and he goes to Jesus. He can't physically go there, but he sends someone to go for him. He takes his concerns, and he takes his questions, and he takes his confusion, and he goes to Jesus. He doesn't ask everyone else. He doesn't ask the other people in the prison there with him. We like to do that, ask everyone in the same situation. He goes to Jesus. And that's what we need to do. When we find ourselves in places of confusion, we find ourselves in places of doubt, and we find ourselves wondering, we're going through a trial, maybe we're confused about some things, we need to go to him. So John, he sends some of his disciples to Jesus, and Jesus answers him in a way that would make sense to John. He says, I want you to tell him this. Jesus doesn't say, I am the Messiah or I'm not. He says, I want you to tell John this. The blind receive, we've heard it 7 times already. The blind receive their sight. The lame walk. The lepers are cleansed. The deaf hear. The dead are raised up. And the poor have the gospel preached to them. And that's exactly what John needed to hear to get over this confusion. That's what Jesus does. When we go to him, he'll confirm it to us in a way that makes sense to us. It made sense to John. We know John doesn't give up. He continues, living for God. And So what can we learn from John and this story? Is that we can take our complaints, our confusions, our doubts, our concerns to Jesus. We find ourselves confused and we don't know why we're at, why we're where we're at. We can take it to Him. Go to His Word. Let Him answer. Jesus backed up what He was doing with Scripture. If we ever have any doubts, if we ever have any confusion, we just need to get into the Word. We need to pray. We need to let God speak to us. Because there's going to come times when we get frustrated. There's going to come times when we get confused. When things happen and they shake us. Even unshakable people like John can be shaken. Even the greatest among us can be shaken. It happens. And when we face that, we need to get to Him. We need to get into His Word and we need to pray. Confusion, again, is not always a bad thing. Confusion is part of learning. Confusion is a pit stop on the road to clarity. It should fuel us and it should drive us to learn more, to get closer to Him. If we find ourselves confused, and God, I don't know why we're here. I don't know what we're doing. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. I don't know why this is happening. We can go to Him. It should drive us to Him because He's got the answer. He's going to tell us what it is that we need to hear. It's okay to ask questions if you ask Jesus. He's the one with the answers. And so, again, whatever He's going to tell you is going to line up with His Word and prayer. That's what He does to John. Everything He's lining up. So through prayer and the Word, He can lead us from a place of confusion into a place of confidence. Confidence in Him, confidence in who He is, confidence in your calling and your relationship with Him. So we're going to pray this morning. I know this was a little maybe more low key than I wasn't yelling very much or whatever, but if you're in that place today, if you're in a place of maybe confusion and just you don't quite understand why you're at or why you're where you're at. Maybe, I don't know. I don't have the answers to what He does. So let's go to Him today. Let's find a place and pray. And you know the altar's open. You can come and we'll pray with you. We can pray in your seat, whatever. Let's just find a place. And if that's you today, why don't you just reach out to Him? We have a tendency to go looking everywhere else for answers first. Let's talk to Jesus today. Let's let Him speak. Let Him minister to us. We go from that place of confusion to confidence. In Jesus' name, let's pray together today.